Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Impact Factor. I am your host, Katie Van Aken, and it's been a few weeks, but we have a couple cool interviews coming up. And this week, I got a chance to talk to a currently still an undergrad chemistry major who is in the application process for her PhD, and it was really fun to talk about it. So, without further ado, here is Mel Stark. Okay. All right, Mel, let's start from the beginning. You are still an undergrad currently, and what is your major?
Yes, I am still an undergrad, and I am a chemistry major. I'm a senior at Haverford College.
And what? Yeah. Go ahead. Yeah.
I was going to say it's weird. Like, I started college in, like, the pandemic, like, 2020.
True.
So it just feels like it's been a short time, but also a really long time is how it's felt.
Did you come into undergrad wanting to be a chemistry major?
I knew that I liked it in high school, but I actually came into Haverford thinking I would be like a behavioral neuroscience major.
Interesting.
Yeah, I ended up taking intro to psych, and I was like, this is the worst thing I've ever done in my life. It was so much memorizing and like, I had to know all these terms. It did not work out.
I mean, that's the nice thing about a liberal arts school, right? Is that you don't have to come in for sure knowing, and you get to kind of try it out a little bit and you learn what you don't want to do, which is just as important, right?
Yeah, that's so true. You were a physics major, right?
I was. I thought I was going to be
did
biophysics.
You know?
I did. Mm-hmm. I loved physics when I came into, when I was in high school. Like a nerdy amount loved physics. And then I was like, I want to keep studying this in undergrad. And then I was like, but I kind of want to do like an applied side of physics. So I was going to concentrate in biophysics. Then I took biology. Same thing. I was like, this is the worst thing ever.
Oh my God.
It was the lowest grade I ever got.
And same.
It just wasn't
same.
For me. And so, same. You know, switched gears a little bit and stuck with physics and, you know, changed directions. But so important to learn those things early on, you know.
Yeah. I was also, like, biology was required as part of the chem major. That ended up being my lowest grade, too.
Ugh, so hard.
It was so hard. So hard.
I did take chemistry senior year, and I really liked it, actually.
Yes! I knew it. If you like physics, you have to like chemistry, I feel like. They kind of go hand in hand sometimes.
Also, because I was taking Gen Chem as a senior, and I was like, this is the easiest thing ever, because I was just taking like 300 level physics classes, you know, and I was like, this is great, yeah. So I had a good time.
That's really nice.
I had Casey, he was my teacher, he was my professor.
Yeah. No way, Casey's my mentor. Yeah.
Really?
Yes.
Okay, we'll get to that. full circle.
Right.
So you must have enjoyed chemistry early on to pursue it as your major. Is that sort of what happened?
Yeah. I was lucky in my high school. I know not all high schools have like the same like access to like STEM and like resources and stuff like that, but my high school was really lucky in that it was a huge school. We literally had 4,000 kids at my high school. Wow. Yeah, and our class sizes were like 40, anywhere from 40 to 50 people, which depending on where people go to college, that seems big or small. Like at Haverford, the class sizes are like 20 people, right?
Yeah.
It's very different. So, and my school is just like this big public school. We started class at like 7:30 in the morning. And I had this one teacher, his name is Mr. Kinsey. And for some reason, he was just so excited about chem every morning. And like, he was able to get like the 50 kids in his class to get excited about it too. And I was one of those kids. I was just, it was a good time. And I feel like because it was great. Yeah.
Yeah. So important. I feel like a lot of, especially STEM majors I talk to, they can pinpoint like one teacher in a STEM field that like really had an impact on them. Which is really cool. to look back on.
Yeah, I was really lucky to have him in high school because I know a lot of people don't have professors like that early on. So
Yeah.
it was really nice.
So when did you start doing research at Haverford? At what point?
So the way it works at Haverford is like, and I'm sure you know this because you were probably doing physics research too, but it's just for people who are listening. It's like you attend lab meetings and then if you're lucky and if the professor has spots, then you kind of just get ingratiated as part of the lab. So I started attending lab meetings in the beginning of 2020. 2022. Oh my gosh, 2022. I
I
was
was
going
gonna
to say
say
not.
during COVID.
So during my sophomore year, the start of my sophomore year, and then in January of 2022, Casey was like, I have an opening. And then I joined his lab, and then I started that semester. Yeah.
Cool. And then were you continuing in the summers?
Yes, one summer, that summer, like 2022, going into my junior year, I
Okay.
did the on-campus research here too.
Nice. And then did you do another type of research before senior year?
Yes. Oh my gosh, this is my senior year. That's crazy. Sorry. Going from like my junior year to my senior year, like that summer from May to August, I did an internship with Johnson & Johnson Innovative Medicine. And that was very different than the work that I had done at Haverford because I'm a chem major, obviously. And the work at J&J was more like biology heavy. So it was just a whole different experience.
Yeah,
And it's
but it
industry,
was,
so.
yeah, so it was sort of like industry research versus academic research, too.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But cool
Very
you got to
different.
experience both of that because, you know, as someone pursuing the PhD, those are two very different paths that you might end up in, so.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, I was really lucky. It kind of made me mad. I literally applied to like 65 internships and I only got the one, which is
Wow.
crazy. Yeah. Yeah. And I'm not
Well,
alone in that. Like, it's just so competitive for no reason.
yeah, well, it's all automated, right? Like resume reading and yeah. Tough.
Yes. Very scary.
So you've had, you know, a pretty decent amount of research experience, I would say, for an undergrad. What are your thoughts on research as in general?
Like research as an undergraduate or just
Or
research
just
generally?
like, just generally, like, you know, some people get pretty quickly turned away from it because it's like all about the unknown, or it's very basic, you know, minuscule steps in progress, but there's nothing like big to show for it, you know, at the end of a paper,
Yep.
even.
Yep.
Yeah.
Definitely. Definitely have been this brings me back to my summer going into my junior year. Oh my God. I literally so my lab, so research generally, I think you have to really like failure to want to be attracted to research. And I feel like that's a thing that's like it's like the love hate. Like you love the possibility of like finding out something new. And you hate the failure, but you have to love it at the same time to like keep going
Yeah.
back to it generally. That reminds me of 2 summers ago when I worked here. Oh my God. My job was to purify this protein because we were trying to put a probe onto it. Like that was the whole project. Like, how can we probe this protein? But we had to purify it first. So I was
Okay.
purifying this protein over and over again. And this had been an issue in our lab for a little bit. And I kept taking gels of the purified protein, and I say that in quotes. And the protein kept coming up at a band that it wasn't supposed to. So it had a much higher weight than we had expected. And
Yeah.
all summer I was getting this protein, and for some reason the probes weren't sticking. And I was like, what's happening right now? And my PI was kind of like, oh, it's just the protein. It's just being weird. Like, you don't know how it's going to act. It's really dysfunctional. So the last week of the summer, literally the last week, we went to Penn to look at this protein. It turned out that it was like literally some other random protein I had been purifying all summer long.
Wow.
I was so like devastated, but then at the same time, I was actually really happy. I feel like that's the part of research. It's just like you're relieved to figure out what's going on, but at the same time, it's like all of that work for what? Like,
Yeah.
I had all this
Well, that
random protein.
and that's what they say. A lot of the cool discoveries are made because someone like took a second look at a weird, unexpected result. And
Yes.
usually it's, and it could be, you know, user error, and then you're just like, oh, whoops, I spent all summer doing this, you know, or whatever. Or it could be, you know, an unexpected result and a very cool discovery at the same time. So.
It's true. I mean, like, how do you feel about research? You've gone through the PhD process, so you must also kind of love and hate it.
Yeah, I also did research every summer in undergrad,
Oh, wow.
and I did like it. I think I wanted to do, this is partly why I went into engineering for my PhD, was because I wanted it to be less basic physics research and more applied. And so when you go into like an engineering field, you're not working on something that, you know, might be a thing in 50 years. You're working on something that might be a thing in like 5 years, you know,
Oh,
like,
really?
yeah. So like,
It's
while I was
fast.
working, it's faster. So
Okay,
like, I was
okay, okay.
working on materials for energy storage, and you know, there's people who have come through my group who are now working at startups that are, you know, manufacturing these new materials that have been discovered in the past 5 to 10 years. So there's like definitely some turnover from what you work on to what like gets used in society, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, I feel like it's more satisfying because then you know
Yeah.
you're having an impact instead of just like theoretically you may have an impact in 50 years. You never know.
Exactly. Like,
That's really
someone might
cool.
cite your paper in 5 years,
Yeah.
and then they might
Yeah.
get cited in 5 years, and then 50 years later, and turns out your paper was important, but you never know.
Yeah, literally.
Yeah. But the other thing too that I like about research that I miss now that I'm not in it anymore is sort of the creativity and the just like the freedom to try things and be on like the cutting edge. And part of this comes with like the information that you take in. So like reading current papers and knowing like what everyone's trying. And then like my favorite part of my PhD was like, well, not my favorite part. One of my favorite parts was sitting in like a room with some of my lab mates and being like, this was the result. Like, let's brainstorm why this might have happened. You know, like, let's just
Yeah.
draw it out on the whiteboard. Like, what do you think is going on here? Because we were looking at novel materials, so there wasn't really an answer, but we could definitely like come up with some possibilities, which was kind of fun.
Yeah, that's the fun like puzzle piece, like trying to figure out what's happening part of it. It's interesting, so you do miss the research now.
I do. I don't really miss batteries because I
Yeah.
spent 5 years studying batteries, but I
Oh
miss
boy.
like the concept of
Oh yeah.
research. Yeah.
That's very understandable. I feel like I'll get to a point where I'll be like, that's it, but it's a good thing I'm not doing it anymore.
Yeah. And I think if for anyone, like, I mean, there are plenty of people who go and become professors and study the same stuff that they did when they were a PhD student. And I'm like very impressed by that because
Yeah.
the one thing in a PhD program is you become like the singular expert on the most narrow topic that ever existed, and nobody cares that much about this topic that you have written 100 pages about, you know.
That's
And like,
crazy.
it's no wonder that many of us are like, I never want to think about that ever again.
Yeah. Yeah. Although I feel like it's kind of cool like that you're like the expert in that one thing. Like I feel like that's
Yeah.
kind of like I would feel really confident about it, you know?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's why, you know, people will always talk about their thesis, their dissertation defense as, you know, kind of a scary moment, and it is, but I always kind of encourage people that like there's nobody in the room that knows more about what they're talking about than they do. And
That's
like maybe
true.
their PI is closely a second. But your PI is on your side. So, at some point there's a confidence there that like you've been doing this for years and nobody else knows more about it than you.
I feel like the confidence thing is what I'm going to struggle with. But I was going to ask, like, so you went to the dissertation. How, like, what was that like?
So, you flipped the podcast on me. Now you're interviewing
Oh.
me.
I'm trying to figure this out before I get into a PhD program
Yeah, no,
at
it's good. It's
UNM.
fine. It's
Okay.
fine. I just thought it was funny. Yeah, so the dissertation is interesting. So the way it worked in my department is we had what was called a pre-defense and a defense. And so the pre-defense was a closed door, like hour to 2 hours, kind of informal walkthrough of your defense with your committee and your PI. And so you were sort of saying, here's what I'm going to defend on, and here's what my dissertation covers. What are your thoughts? And at that point, they can be like, you should really run these experiments before you leave, or they
Like,
could
do
be
them
like,
all over.
no, like additional, like here's a couple of suggested experiments to run that you could maybe include in your dissertation presentation or your thesis presentation or your dissertation. But most of the time, at least in my department, they were like, this is good, you have plenty, here are some things to think about, and like go finish writing and schedule your defense. So then at that point, the defense, and maybe this is wrong, but this is how I thought about it, was sort of like a formality in the sense of like they weren't going to fail me at that point, right? So I invited everybody I knew to that presentation.
Oh, you're
Like,
bold. That is crazy.
well, that's why, because I was like, this is not just like me defending. Like, I felt like I had already defended it to my committee in that closed door session. And at this point, it was sort of like a celebration and culmination of like 5 years of work where all the people in the room had like experienced it with me, or like, were people that I played soccer with in the city every week. And like, they knew
They came.
about what I was going. Yeah, they came. Yeah.
That's, I would cry, I think. That's so sweet.
Yeah, it was really cool. And like, I was playing music when they walked in, and like, I had like a little slideshow at the end of pictures from my experience with like grad school friends and also Philly friends. And it felt like something. And I'll tell you this. So my mom has her PhD too. And when she talks about her defense, she like
Oh,
can't
wow.
really remember it. She's like, I blacked it out. Like, it was so stressful. Like, I was so
Yeah.
nervous and I don't remember it. And I'm like, I don't want that. Like, I'm telling you about it. Like, I have really good memories about that day.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that's
Oh.
how it was for me. But it definitely differs across
Yes, I can
schools and
imagine.
departments.
No, it sounds like you had a really good support, not like a group in your lab. That's awesome. And that I'm glad I asked you because now I have like a different mindset. Not
Less
trying to be,
fear.
yeah, less fear, less fear. So it is like the dissertation is like the summary of your 5 years or however long. Wow.
Yeah, and a lot of students struggle with sort of putting that 5 years worth of work into a cohesive story.
Yeah.
Because a lot of times, you have side projects and you have collaborative projects, and like really what the definition of a PhD is like, what's that thread of that independent, study and research that you've done and therefore gained perspective on this field and can share now with the world.
Wow. So how long did that end up being, like that talk?
The talk? So that's another interesting question, because a lot of students struggle with What does that dissertation defense presentation look like? Because
Yeah.
are you presenting to your committee or are you presenting to your parents and your
Yeah, and
friends?
that's an entirely different presentation you're giving. Like,
Exactly. So again, it differs at different places. I sort of tried to fall somewhere in the middle, but probably lean towards more friends and family. So I was sort of explaining it in a high level perspective. And I mean, I had data and I had graphs and like I was getting into the nitty-gritty a little bit, but I always tried to bring each section of the talk back to like, what does this mean for you as a person who isn't studying this, you know?
I love that. I love that you did that.
Yeah. So it was like maybe 50 minutes. It's supposed to be like 45 to 60 minutes, I think.
Oh my God, I thought you said 15 at first, and then I
No.
realized you said 50.
Yeah,
Oh, that's like
50.
a movie,
But
Katie.
it's good. Once you get, so I just went to one recently, another Haverford grad, and
Hey, that's
who
awesome.
had Casey, who was her, he was her PI.
That's awesome.
So she was at Penn and her, and you know, you can tell she was super nervous and like
Yes.
everyone's nervous. But then once you get talking, you're basically like, you're just like in a flow because you've been speaking about this stuff for so long that it's almost like it just comes out of you without even thinking. And by the time you're defending, you've also gone to conferences and you've presented posters and talks and you know, you've been the expert on this and shared about it so many times that it doesn't feel like a long time. In fact, it goes by rather quickly when you're just standing there talking.
Oh, that's crazy. Wow. Okay. I hope
Getting
that's how it
excited?
feels.
You getting
Yeah,
excited now?
I'm getting kind of excited. Like that just sounds like really like full, like full circle moment.
Yeah, good.
It's really cool.
So we talked about research and how you're signing up to do more of it by doing
Yep.
this. Yep.
Yeah.
What part of the PhD process or I guess what was the moment that where you decided that this is what you wanted to do next?
This is an interesting question. So for me, I didn't know I wanted to get a PhD until literally this past summer,
Okay.
which I feel like, I don't know about other people, but I feel like that's kind of late for like for an undergraduate to realize. I had all these thoughts like I was going to go into law school or maybe I would do like a 4+1 like bioethics with Penn because I'm really interested in like the ethics of science and everything. But then I was doing this biology internship this summer, and I was shadowing like one of the medicinal chemistry buildings, and I met this guy. His name is Brahma Ghosh, and he kind of showed me what chemical biology was, which is like, it's not biochemistry. I thought chemical biology and biochem were the same thing.
Interesting.
It's actually like, it's really cool. And chemical biology is when you like basically start with organic synthesis or you start at like the chemistry side. Like let's say you're creating a probe and then you carry the project to the end where you're like testing the probe and seeing like how effective it is in like your cells,
In a
things like that.
biological application.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, cool.
So I think it's really cool that you're kind of carrying the project start to finish. But anyway, like when he told me about that and I saw the like the work his lab was doing, I was like, oh wow, this is really cool. But I realized like to be doing what he was doing or like anybody in his lab, you do need to get a PhD.
Yeah.
So that like for me, it's again, I don't know if this is normal or not. I don't know if this is acceptable to say, but it's kind of like a means to an end in a way. Like my PhD is not like I'm doing it because I love the work, but also it like I just want it to get me to a place where I can do what I love, if that makes sense.
I think a lot of people feel that way. You know, you have to have a PhD to be a professor most of the time. So if people want to continue in higher education and teaching, they have to go through the PhD process. My mom, who I mentioned, she has a PhD in psychology, and she
Wow.
has to have a PhD to practice psychology, so like clinically.
Wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah,
That's
so,
crazy.
or at least she did at that point when she was doing this, so she very much felt like it was a means to an end.
Okay. That's reassuring to hear, because some people are like, they're just doing it because they just want to go through the process of getting a PhD. And I think the process of getting a PhD makes you a really good scientist and a really different type of thinker, which is obviously worth it. But for me, it is just to get me to the place where I could do what I want to do, you know?
And you could reframe that too a little bit and also add that, you want to go into this field that requires a PhD, but you also need to like learn more about the field, which you didn't have a chance to do in undergrad just because of circumstances. So, basically doing a whole nother round of education where you become more familiar with this field.
And like, I feel like the prospect, like when you described, like you're like the expert on this really narrow thing, I feel like I would really like
Good.
that.
And
I really do.
you've already narrowed yourself from chemistry to chemical biology potentially, right? And then
Yes.
I'm sure there are subfields of that and
Yeah,
applications
there
of
are.
that. And so the PhD process will allow you to discover and narrow yourself even further till you get that point.
Yes. Yeah, that's why I'm being really careful about like which labs I'm selecting, because I know that going through that lab and like going through the entire like process is going to shape me in a very specific way, I feel like.
Let's talk about that. That's a good, thanks for the
Okay.
transition.
Okay,
So,
awesome.
have
Awesome.
you been applying to a lot of schools intentionally because of the labs and research that they're doing?
Yeah, and I'm getting a little, I think it's good, but it's making me a little bit worried. So there's some reasons for that. I am just looking at the research, and I'm looking at like the PIs and like their publications, like to see what is something I could dedicate 5 or more years of my life to. I feel like it's really important. It's hard though. I know that like when you're a really great research lab and a really great institution, you're getting publications out. Sometimes like the mentoring or like the environment and the culture there is like the worst. And I'm like, and it's just, I'm at the point, I've actually just decided, I was like going back and forth, like, do I want more of a balance or is it okay that it might be really intense? And I think I've just decided I'm just gonna go and just jump in, and like if I get depression during the 5 years, that's just what happens.
Well, and also like, I recommend when you're deciding between, to definitely talk to some current students and kind of get a sense of the environment as best you can, in addition, because there are some of those labs that are very competitive and even if you love what you're doing, you aren't gonna like who you're working for or who you're working with, and it's possible. I mean, it sounds like you've thought about that, and there's plenty of students I know who have switched labs or switched schools,
Oh,
which
wow.
is kind of like not talked about a ton,
Yeah, I was
but
gonna say, I've
it's
never heard of that. That's really
because it's
cool.
kind of like, I don't know, maybe there's like a stigma associated with it because you're sort of abandoning your group, but there are definitely solid reasons to do so, and mental health is one of them.
Yes, that's true. That's true.
So.
But I feel like I'm pretty resilient, and I feel like, I don't know, I feel like I'm able to get along with people. And I'm just, the only thing I'm worried about is like Haverford is a really like friendly and supportive environment. Some of the schools I'm looking at, like I'm aware of like certain circumstances where students are like stealing other students' work. And it's just like, am I ready for that? Who knows? How could you know? You
How
know?
could you know? We'll have to get you back on to talk about that in a year or so.
Yeah,
You'll be
would love
like,
that.
Mel,
I would
whose
love
research
that.
did you steal this week? No, just kidding.
Yeah. Knowing me, I would be the one who's like giving away my research without even knowing it. I'm like, oh, you need help?
You're
Just
like,
take
I could lock it
it
up, but I just don't want to. So
from me.
it's fair game.
That's how it would be.
Okay, so research is the most important thing for you. Are you also like looking into like location of schools?
Yes, I am. So I think with location comes how much they're going to be able to pay you. And I
True.
think, like,
The
because
cost
in
of
some
living.
cases, the cost of living is like
Yeah.
kind of incredibly unaffordable in some places. So
Yeah.
I feel like I have a couple, like, one school on the West Coast. But I feel like other than that, it's just like most of them just can't pay enough, and that's understandable, but I just can't afford to like live there. So most of my
Yeah.
schools are on the Northeast or in the Midwest so far.
Nice.
Yeah. Did you have a geographic preference too, or?
Sort of. I definitely wanted to stay on the East Coast. I'm from the East Coast originally.
Same,
I
yeah.
actually don't think I applied anywhere on the West Coast. But I also like one of the two of the schools I was looking at, I mentioned this to you before, was the University of Delaware and Drexel, and they're very similar programs. Like I really enjoyed both departments, but Drexel's in the middle of Philly and UD is like in the middle of a nice town in Delaware.
Yeah, it's a little different.
It's a little different, and they're both like great experiences. And I know people who have gone to Delaware, but I think for me it was important to have like other things going on around me, like
Yes.
the ability to play soccer, the ability to like go to concerts and like and have a non-PhD part of my life as
Yeah.
well.
Oh my God, that's so important. I feel like that's so important.
Yeah, and I know some students from my program who came from undergrad at like University of Illinois Urbana and like some of those very remote schools, and students there
Oh.
publish a lot because there's not anything else to do, right? But that's an experience, and some people are all for that. But I'm glad that I didn't have that experience because I think
My
it would have been
God.
lonely.
Yeah, I don't know if I would like be really happy in that environment. I'm sure that they're really successful though because of all those
Yeah.
papers, but it comes at a cost. I don't know. That's crazy.
It does, and it's not for everyone, and finding what's right for you is the most important piece.
Yes, that's true. That's true.
Let's see. So we talked about this before we started recording, I think, but you are currently or just finishing the fellowship application process?
Oh my God, it's over. Thank God it's over.
Yeah.
Okay, I don't know, did you apply for the NSF grant when you were an undergrad?
I did. I didn't do it until I got there, though.
Like
Wait,
until you got
yeah.
into grad school?
Yeah. So I didn't come
Okay.
in with it, but it power to you that you're doing it before you go because it makes you very marketable if you
If you get
get
it.
one. Yeah.
Yeah, like I'm manifesting it, but the likelihood of getting an NSF grant is like what, one in a million? Like
Yeah.
I recognize that it's okay, but I feel like the process of doing it is just like I'm just so proud that I even did it. Like the
Yeah.
process is so intense. It's so intense.
Well, I think back to when they were like, "Oh yeah, and you have to write like a research proposal for a research project." And I was like, "I haven't even started grad school yet. What do you mean? Like
I know, literally.
you want to know what I'm going to research?" And the people around me were like, "Oh, you don't actually have to do it. Like you just have to write it." And I was like, "Doesn't matter. I still don't know what to write, you know?"
Yeah, and especially as an undergrad, like the only research I've been exposed to is what I've done here, what I've
Right.
done at J&J. And like, I feel like I can't really write about what I did at J&J because that's proprietary.
Right.
And then everything
And
I
you
did at
want to pivot.
Haverford, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I want to pivot.
Yeah. Yeah, it's tough. But
It
like
is
you said,
tough.
it's a good experience, and there's a very real chance that you'll be helping somebody write a grant proposal at some point in your 5 years
True.
anyway.
True.
So having that experience is good.
I will also say, like, to anybody who's listening, if you're considering grad school, I recommend doing it just because if you do the NSF, like, it's a 3-page single space personal statement, and then that basically writes all of your PhD applications. So it's like, now for the rest of my stuff, I just have to pull from it because it's so big. It encompasses so much stuff, like your broader impact, your intellectual merit, all of that stuff. So whether you want to get the research or not, I recommend it.
Good tip.
Recommend it. Yeah.
So we sort of covered this, but I'm curious if you thought about kind of what you want to do post PhD, and you don't have to know, but.
I can see myself like almost like a paralegal or like a patent lawyer, potentially.
Oh,
It's very,
cool.
yeah.
I always thought that a patent lawyer would be a cool profession, but you have to keep going to school, right? You have to get a law degree as well.
Actually, I'm not sure you do. So
Really?
I was talking to somebody about it over the summer because my program is awesome. If anybody's applying for internships, I recommend it's called J&J Oncology. It's at Springhouse, and the program is awesome. And what they did was they brought in lecture series, so different parts from Jan. It was called Janssen, but different parts of J&J would come in, and like patent law was there, like lab operations with it was there, like all these different fields, clinical studies, like bioethics, everything. And what the patent lawyer said was they went to law school, but there are a bunch of people who only have PhDs in like chemistry, biology, whatever, and they kind of act like as like the interface between the lawyers
Oh,
and the
cool.
scientists. And I'm like, I could do that. I feel like that's really cool. That's really cool.
Yeah, 'cause who wants to do both of those degrees? That's like 8 more years of
That's
school, so.
so, and law school is so expensive, like.
Yeah. So how about you just do one where they pay you a little bit to do it? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's,
Cool.
I don't know, that's like an idea, but who knows what's gonna happen.
Yeah, I mean, 5 years is a long time. But what
Yeah.
you've learned, I think, or if I can speak freely, is that talking to people who are doing different things is super valuable for kind of pointing your trajectory and learning what you don't want to do. You know, just hearing those people talk, I think, was probably valuable to be like, I don't want to do that.
Yes, that is so true. Like that, I made it my goal at Johnson and Johnson. Like every week over the summer, I think I met with like at least one or two people every single week that I was there.
Wow.
So like that's a lot of people, and and they gave me their time, which just goes to show like reach out. You never know what's gonna happen. People
Yeah.
will talk to you. People love to talk. So
And especially about themselves, you know? It's not
yes.
even like you were asking for anything. You were just like, "Tell me about you."
Yeah,
And
literally.
what do you do every day, you know?
And I feel like maybe I don't know if this is true of all pharma companies, but J&J was really like interested in like mentoring, giving people resources. So it was really good. It was really good.
Cool. So this is off topic, but now that your applications or your fellowship applications are done, what are your hobbies? What are some other things you do outside of school?
Ooh, I saw that you sent me this question. I got instantly upset. Just like,
Because
I
you're like,
was
I don't have
like,
any hobbies.
yes, I'm one of those people now. I feel like
I was the
I
same in
hate
college. It's
it.
okay. It's okay.
No, it's I hate it though. But I guess it has to. I don't know. It kind of has to be this way where all your time is going towards what you're doing, but it's
Yeah.
kind of boring. Like
But
I work out.
okay. You like to run? That's a
I like to
hobby.
run. Yes, I love going to concerts. I love baking.
These are hobbies. This is
These
great.
are things. These are things that I do. I
You
love hanging
probably
out with my
don't have a lot of
friends.
time to do all of them, but when if you did, you would do them more, you know?
Yeah, I never have time anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I actually thought
Well,
like senior year would be really chill,
yeah.
but my busiest
Not
year of
yet.
all time. No. Yeah.
Well, I encourage you to try to let yourself do those things when you're in your PhD program because it can similarly take over your life. And
Yes.
it's good to have sort of a mental break. Like I was coaching soccer when I was getting my PhD, which was actually so valuable because I would go and I would be responsible for all of these college kids playing soccer. And I was like, I can't possibly think about my research right now because I have to run
Oh,
a practice, you know?
true.
And so by the time it was over, my brain had like taken a break from the stress, and I think it was probably really good.
Did you find it, like, how did you find it? How hard or easy was it for you to make time for that, though? Because I feel like that sounds pretty time consuming.
Yeah, so I first started when I went to Drexel. I reached out and to the club soccer team and said, I just came off, playing in D3. Can I play club with you guys? And they were like, well, we don't really have any spots left, and like we only really give them to undergrads or grads if we
Wow.
have to, or grad school grad students if we have to. And I was like, okay.
Wow.
I was also kind of late to the game because they are in quarters, so their like quarter had already started. And they were like, but
Oh.
we just fired our coach today. Do you want to do that? And
What?
I was like, okay, that sounds cool. So, that's how I became a soccer coach. And it was definitely the right amount of time commitment. Like, it was in the evenings, it was twice a week, and then like the occasional weekend. And so it wasn't like terrible, and it got me kind of out of the lab on whatever Tuesdays and Thursday nights for a couple hours. And
Wow.
yeah, I lucked out. I think it was a good like just say yes moment for me, where I like didn't really think too
Yeah.
hard, and I was like, yeah, let's do it, you know.
That's crazy.
Yeah, and I
Wait,
did
so
that
you
for
were.
all 5 years.
You start, so even your first year of your PhD program, you were the coach. Oh, that's crazy. That
And
I can't even imagine.
the nice thing about club programs is they, especially for sports, they want the club, they want the players to own the club. Like, they want there to be like a president, a vice president. Like, the club is run by the players, and you're just there to teach them the sport, the soccer. So a
That's
lot
so
of the like,
nice.
yeah, so a lot of the like administrative stuff and everything, like the officers or the captains, as we called them,
Yeah.
handled. And then, I would just show up to practice, and I would be like, we're doing these drills and games and stuff like that. So
Wow.
it was good.
That sounds like a
So
really good
anyway.
like leadership experience too. Like you were
Yeah.
literally like leading this. That's crazy.
And I was only maybe a year older than them, so that was also kind of an interesting experience too. But here I am, 10 years later, still coaching soccer in some capacity. So
Yes, I love that you always
clearly
find time for it.
it was good. Yeah. And I think, so I always encourage PhD students to find something like that that forces them to take a break, whether it's, exercising, training for a marathon. Blech, could never do that.
Yeah.
Or even playing in like weekly like kickball leagues, something that keeps you looking forward to something outside of your lab.
That's really good advice. That's really good advice.
Okay, so I have two wrap-up questions for you. One of them is something challenging you have faced. And I'm going to leave that open-ended to like grad school related, research related, school related, life related.
It's a big spectrum.
It is. But you can pick
Okay.
whatever way, whichever direction you want to go.
I have like two immediate things that come to my head.
Great.
And they're things that I've been like struggling with recently, actually. So the first is, and I'm sure a lot of people probably tell you this, but like not comparing myself to other people and just like staying focused on myself and not worrying about who's doing what and am I doing enough and feeling inadequate and just like beating myself down for no reason. Like, it's really hard to stop the negative self-talk in this process. And just because you're applying for something that's relatively competitive, it's like I'm competing with myself in a weird way. So like being positive and focusing on myself has been a really big challenge in this process. The other thing is like making, oh yeah, what were you gonna say? What were you gonna say?
I was going to say that I do hear that a lot as a challenge. A lot of people deal with it when they first start grad school too, because what's
No.
yeah, but here I'm going to warn you and then you'll be fine. So
Okay.
going into like your classes, right? You'll have your other first year students, and it's very easy to sort of look around and compare yourself to them and
Yeah.
what they know and what they are good at, right? But the key is that everyone in your class is coming from a different, like, educational pathway. So, whereas you majored in chemistry at a Haverford, you know, someone might have majored in chemical biology at Penn State, you know, and so what you learned and what they learned was
Whoa.
different.
That's true.
And so, in some classes, you might be like, I know this really well. And in other classes, you might be like, everybody knows this but me. But that's okay because the PhD is a very individual journey, which makes it challenging. But the more that you remember that it's about, you know, you passing the classes and you doing your research and nobody else is doing your research, like it's just you, then if you're able to motivate yourself throughout the process, you know, you can sort of, it's ideally you can focus in on how it's your own something, it's yours.
You have so much good advice. I feel like it's because you've been through it, but
I
I
have,
should have
and
been
I've been
taking
talking to
notes.
people for a year now doing this, and it, you know, it's amazing how many people have the same like challenges, honestly, and like it's the same, and it's sad because I feel like a lot of that could be helped,
Yeah. How
but
though?
not what? Yeah, but not by like just
Yeah,
telling them don't feel that way, you know, but by
yeah.
recognizing, like even from a higher education like department standpoint, knowing that first year students are going to feel this way. Okay, what can we do to remind them that like this is an independent journey and there's like, you know, just things to like pull you back into the reality of the fact that
Yeah.
you're not comparing yourself. But it's hard. It really is hard.
Yeah. I feel like it is sad that other people are doing it, but it is also reassuring to know.
Yeah. And that's another thing. I think one of the things that the people that I talk to that get past it a lot better are the ones that find support in the other students. And that only comes from sharing your vulnerabilities a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah,
So,
that's also
sort
hard.
of admitting that you feel like inadequate allows for the person next to you to be like, oh my God, me too, you know? And then now you guys are like allies in that and you can talk
Yeah.
about it. So, just consider it.
I will consider it. Yeah, that's also really good advice.
Okay, you had another one.
My
Another
last thing
challenge.
was the last thing is like as I'm applying to PhDs and everything, it's like I wanna like do as much as I can as an undergraduate to like get what's left of my college experience. And like also, yeah, just balancing everything, like still trying to have my senior year, but then also do all the activities I want to do and then do PhD stuff. Like I'm literally working three jobs now. I was working four, but now I just couldn't do it. So it's just like the balancing is just really hard.
Yeah, it is. It is hard. I don't know if I have as much advice for that one because that's just,
Yeah, I feel like
it's
yeah.
gonna be your life for the next
I
however many
know.
years. But
I know.
I will say that, you know, the PhD experience, I'm gonna harp on this, is a very independent thing and you can very easily get lost. Because there needs to be some level of self-motivation to get through it, and also
Yeah.
organization. And so what you're doing now is only preparation for that like environment later. So things like balancing, you know, work and school and looking ahead to what's next and also trying to have fun sometimes. Like
Yeah.
that all sounds like what a PhD is like. So
That's crazy.
you're becoming an expert. before you even start.
Well, oh boy. Hopefully that helps me in the future. And hopefully it doesn't burn me out.
Yes. I hope so too. Okay, last question. What advice would you give yourself a year ago? So a year ago would be pre your internship, pre knowing you wanted to get a PhD.
It would be one thing I would say, which is going to sound kind of contradictory, going to be go with your gut, but be open to what people are telling you and new experiences. But you know, your gut,
I
that might
understand what you mean
seem,
by contradictory. Yeah.
like that might seem weird, but deep down, you'll know what is best for you and you'll know what you need to do. But in order to know what is best, you need to consider everything and like listen. But you'll have a feeling in your stomach and that feeling is right and you should go with it.
Yeah.
That's my
Like, go with your gut,
advice.
but don't be stubborn about it, right? Like, absorb all the stuff that people are throwing at you.
And then you can be stubborn about it.
Yes. Interesting. Is that based on, a point at which you were like, this is what my gut's telling me? And was that to get your PhD?
It was actually so my PI, he wanted me to apply to REUs, like research experiences for undergraduates. But my gut was like, I really want to know what industry is like. I really want to experience this. And though he did support me, he was insisting I do an REU, and my gut was like, no, like don't. And I feel like my industry experience changed everything, and I'm so thankful for it. So I feel like little Mel knew what was best, and I feel like that we st I still know what is best, you know?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, and to go off what you said, like, only you know what's best for you, really.
Yes, yeah,
Yeah.
exactly. Exactly.
Well, I'm glad that it's brought you here to
Yeah,
be on our podcast.
if I didn't do it, I wouldn't be here. Isn't that
Yeah.
crazy?
I wouldn't have an episode for Monday.
We wouldn't have met. That would have been so sad.
So sad. Well, that's all my questions. Is there anything else you'd like to discuss while you have the floor?
I guess I have one last question for you.
Sure.
And it's just like, do you ever regret that you got a PhD? Is like, do you ever regret that you spent those 5 years of your life in that process?
That is a great question, and it may surprise you to know that I think about that a lot.
Really?
Yeah, but not in the way you think, maybe. So I think that it would be very easy for, like, I've switched out of academia, I've switched fields from batteries to software, and I'm, doing basically nothing related to my PhD. So I think it would be easy for me to say, yeah, like that was a waste of 5 years. But I don't regret it. Yeah. Just keeping the
How is
suspense going.
that? Yeah, I'm like at the edge of my seat. So like, you don't regret it. Like, what
I don't
made you?
regret it. And for a few reasons. One, because I think a PhD is more than the field that you learn, as far as like development and learning and basically becoming a professional. And I think that there are things that I learned getting a PhD, like public speaking and collaboration and mentoring and individual motivated like project planning. Like it's on you, and there's a confidence around that too. Like, when you're able to do it, you now know you can do that type of thing.
True. This is true.
And I think all of that applies to whatever career you're in, like whatever field you're in. So, yeah, in short, no, I don't regret it. But I do think about it because, one, because people ask me all the time, but also because, I think probably there are people who do regret it who aren't using it, right? Like, if they're not, quote, using it, but I think that I am using it, just not in the, like,
expected
way.
I like that you're able to turn it to that, like, even though you're not using it directly in what you're working on, like, those skills stay with you.
Yes.
That's what I meant. Like, it makes you a better scientist. Like, so I feel like it would be worth it in the end.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that's something that we as PhDs are still trying to sell the rest of the world on, that, like, doing a PhD teaches you other things besides, like, reading research papers and, like, how to mix chemicals, you know?
Yeah.
Like, there are broader skills that you're learning when you're doing a PhD, and people are starting to come around, but it's still a little bit of a battle, but maybe this podcast is helping for the 12 people that listen to it, so. Including my mom.
I'm gonna put my friends onto the podcast, so your numbers should go up.
Good, good. Sounds good. Maybe we'll do an event at Haverford. I feel like that would be cool. Like a live episode or something.
Yeah, and I know people who would be down to speak who are doing, like, med school. I don't know if you do that, but, like, and other PhD people.
I know people who are doing a MD PhD, which is just, what? I think there's a JD PhD. I think Drexel has that.
I was thinking about a JD PhD for a long time.
Yeah. I always thought that an MBA PhD would be cool.
They have that?
But there's very few of those programs in the country.
I was going to say, I've never heard of that.
Yeah. So.
Interesting.
Well, Mel, this was super fun. I hope you enjoyed it.
I did. I was, like, intentional. I wanted to come in, like, not really knowing how this is going to go. And I really liked it. I really appreciate it. Thank you for inviting me to come speak. I hope this was helpful to somebody.
Thanks to Mel for coming on the show. If you or someone you know wants to be interviewed on Impact Factor, feel free to reach out via Instagram and follow us for updates. At Impact Factor Pod. Thank you all for listening and have a great week.